All right.
Practice that. Okay, so Ian Trottier here. Discussion of truth. That seek and destroy, Metallica. Why? Because I seek out to destroy, and we all need to be doing this. We all need to be seeking out to destroy. But certainly, this the goal of this show, the seek out and destroy corruption on all levels, corporate level, political level, you know, whatever it may be. I try not to take sides politically. I try not to take sides religiously. Frankly, I think both major parties in this country are totally corrupt. I get a lot of people that tend to like the work that I do that are conservative. Okay, I see qualities in conservatism and liberalism. The entire political party platform mechanism is controlled by the big banking system that has corruption in this country running rampant. And now we've got unprecedented times. So we've got, for example, our next guest, who I'm going to bring on here momentarily, we've got corruption in the medical industry. Ladies and gentlemen, calling in Dr. Peter A. McCullough right now. Like I said, this is Ian Trottier for Discussion of Truth. We just finished with Mark Shaw. And next hour, I'm going to bring on John O'Connor. Welcoming Peter McCullough here. Mark Shaw is an author, a historian, a lawyer. Did I get the wrong number for Peter, possibly? All right, we'll give him a moment, and we will bring, we'll call him back. I have been exchanging emails with him, so I do know he should be waiting. But Dr. McCullough is an internist, a cardiologist, epidemiologist. He manages common infectious diseases as well as the cardiovascular complications of both the viral infection and the injuries developing after the COVID-19 vaccine in Dallas, Texas. Since the outset of the pandemic, I'm reading this, Dr. McCullough has been a leader in the medical response to the COVID-19 disaster and has published Pathophysiological Basis and Rationale for Early Outpatient Treatment of SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19 Infection, end quote. The first synthesis of sequenced multi-drug treatment of ambulatory patients infected with SARS-CoV-2 in the American Journal of Medicine and subsequently updated in reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine. He has 51 peer-reviewed publications on the infection and has commented extensively on the medical response to the COVID-19 crisis in The Hill, America Out Loud, and on Fox News. November 19th of 2020, so about a year ago today, Dr. McCullough testified in the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs and throughout 2021 in the Texas Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, Colorado General Assembly, New Hampshire Senate, and South Carolina Senate. Concerning many aspects of the pandemic response, McCullough has had 21 months of dedicated academic and clinical efforts in combating the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and in doing so has reviewed thousands of reports, participated in scientific congresses, group discussions, press releases, and has been considered among the world's experts on COVID-19. Let's try to bring Dr. McCullough on once again. This is the number that I was given. Let's see if he's available now. Dr. Peter A. McCullough. This is Ian Trottier for Discussions of Truth. And like I say, in about 30 minutes, well, 45, we'll be bringing on John O'Connor, who is an attorney based in San Francisco. Just finished with Mark Shaw. Mark Shaw having his ass also be in Northern California. Okay, let me go back through. Okay, nothing there. Just going back through this feed here, maybe I've got something wrong. Maybe he's provided an alternative number for me. Or perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps he has an assistant managing these calendar. Here we are. I believe this was the number I just tried. I don't see him providing an alternate number. No, that's the number. There he is. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter McCullough. Peter McCullough, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I was just getting off my prior interview, so I couldn't pick up on the second. Sorry.
You are busy, and we are grateful to have you join Discussion of Truth. Welcome. Thank you for your work. How did that interview go?
It went good. I have to the top of the hour on this one, so I have to be off right at 6 p.m. Dallas Central Time.
You got it. Dr. McCullough, please make a brief introduction for listeners who may not be familiar with your work.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm a practicing internist, cardiologist, and trained epidemiologist in Dallas, Texas. I'm an academic practice, so about half my time is seeing patients in the office and when on call in the hospital. And I practice both general internal medicine and cardiovascular disease. And then the rest of the time in academics, and I previously focused on heart and kidney disease, but since the COVID-19 pandemic has hit, like many good medical practitioners, I really have focused on this as the medical problem of our time. And I've dedicated my research efforts on COVID-19. Now, as a backdrop, I have over 650 papers in the National Library of Medicine. That's in the top of probably a echelon of academic physicians in the world. And I have 51 papers in author block or as a contributor on COVID-19. And I think that's the top of any media doctor you'd see on TV. And I've, for America, been asked to express my opinions through a whole series of opinion editorials in the journal The Hill last year, and now this year on America About Talk Radio, The McCullough Report. I've testified in the U.S. Senate for the Department of Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs in multiple state senates. I provided advice to worldwide leaders on the COVID-19 pandemic. And so far, I've been very careful in keeping my inferences very close to the data. I haven't been wrong on any of my calls so far. I don't anticipate I will, because I'm just not extrapolating beyond the range of the data. And I'm calling the balls, calling the strikes as they come in. And so far, I haven't taken my eye off the ball.
Peter, you're very well accomplished in the field, and you've been on a number of sources. You're in high demand right now. What, in your view, what is happening? Let's just come at it from a very ground basis here. What is happening with this COVID-19 pandemic? In your terms, how do you see this? What is this?
Well, several books have come out basically in the last year. We had a brief one from Diane Andrews, and then Pam Popper, now Peter Bregan, COVID-19, The Global Predators, We Are the Prey. I wrote the introduction for that, and now but one by Robert F. Kennedy, titled The Real Anthony Fauci. You look at these books together, it's relatively clear. They have thousands and thousands of references. It's relatively clear that the COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 virus was engineered in a lab in Wuhan, China. It was genetically engineered. The spike protein was loaded with changes to make the virus far more infectious and far more deadly. It's fairly clear that the companies worked ahead of time to get everything in place to devise vaccines against SARS-CoV-2 before it was ever released out of the lab in China. And then when it did become loose out of the lab in China, it spread across the respiratory illness, spread across the world. the spike protein is really was the deadly feature of the virus. And now the vaccines have come forward, and the first sets of vaccines, at least the genetic vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, they actually trick the body into producing high quantities of the spike protein with the hopes of generating immunity, but it's really backfired because that high level of spike protein has been directly related to unprecedented numbers of deaths after the vaccine, non-fatal injuries, a whole variety of now vaccine-induced injury syndromes that have their own names in medicine. It's triggered a whole wave of regulatory authority warnings on the vaccine. And to make matters worse, the vaccines are not stopping COVID-19 because the virus is mutated. We've learned that the vaccines all run out of protection after about 6 months. And now we're on to our third wave in COVID-19, having large fractions of the population take the vaccine. The United States, we're pushing 70% of people taking the vaccine. Israel, it's over 90%. The UK, it's about 80%. And sure enough, those fractions are those matriculating with COVID-19 being hospitalized and dying. So we're really in a predicament right now where the vaccine program has backfired, and we've taken our attentions away from where we should have been to begin with. We should have always been on early treatment, because early treatment reduces hospitalizations and death, and the vaccines don't do that.
Dr. McCullough, I had on this show Clifford Jones, our Harvard-educated. He's 96 at 92. He scaled a skyscraper up in Toronto. I asked him this question in the early months of early weeks, really, of the pandemic. I says, how would you combat the COVID-19 issue? And he says, any vitamin C administered intravenously will kill any virus. That was his response to me. A man in his 90s. That might sound very basic, but what do you say to that, Peter? What do you say to that?
It's not all about killing the virus, and I think that's the shortcoming of that type of thinking. You know, the virus itself is one issue, and as it replicates in the first few days, within a matter of days, it's triggering off a bizarre type of inflammation. It's called cytokine storm, but the lead cytokine is interleukin-6, which we never see in other syndromes. And interleukin-6 is triggered by fat cells. So who would have guessed that fat cells would play a role in COVID-19? And then how people die with COVID-19, how the oxygen level drops, is blood clots, micro blood clots in the lungs, and then low oxygen saturation. So I can tell you, by the time somebody has a low oxygen saturation, it doesn't matter how much vitamin C you give them. The problem is they have micro blood clots. The vitamin C could have been useful 2 weeks earlier. So what we have to do, and this is what I published in the two seminal papers that taught the world how to treat COVID-19, is we have to use what's called the sequence multi-drug approach for COVID-19. It can never be vitamin C alone, nor can it be hydroxychloroquine alone, or be the new Merck drug alone. It's going to be drugs in combination, just like with acute HIV, acute hepatitis B, staph infections. We always use drugs in combination. So sequence multi-drug therapy is highly effective. It leverages signals of benefit, acceptable safety. We put drugs together in combination, and then we actually apply that early as we can in COVID-19, and we are very successful in reducing hospitalization and death. In fact, hospitalization and death should not happen if patients were properly treated.
Is this a mishap in security in Wuhan? Have you considered why these scientists would even be working on something like this in the first place? And I thread this in, Peter, because Judy Mikovits has been a guest on mine. She first joined on the show. She first joined in 2018. This is a woman that was imprisoned, if you will, for her research. Why would these scientists be working on something like this, in your view? Have you considered that?
Yeah, I'm just going to defer to the books. I mentioned the major books on this where they go back to the early publications. How long were they working on this virus? Well, there's clearly patents and research papers that go back to 2006. There was a planning seminar in Johns Hopkins in 2017. The title of the seminar was called the SPARS pandemic. 2025 is they thought it was going to hit them. It's going to be a coronavirus. It's related to MERS and SARS. There's going to be confusion regarding a drug, i.e. hydroxychloroquine, that the stakeholders were going to use that confusion and fear to basically railroad the population into mass vaccination. That was all written out by Johns Hopkins in 2017. You saw the book written by Klaus Schwab, COVID-19, The Great Reset. I mean, this is all in the open right now. This was basically planned. This is viewed as a tremendous opportunity to change things in the world. It's extraordinary. Klaus Schwab, I have the book right here. You know, this is basically copyrighted in 2020 World Economic Forum. You can't, say anything other than this was planned. This was planned. There's material transfer agreements between Moderna and the Chinese planning out a vaccine against the spike protein. Why would you ever plan a vaccine against the spike protein unless you were planning for a COVID-19 pandemic? So I'm not an expert in how all this came together, but there are so many stakeholders, the U.S. federal government, the Chinese, the lab in Wuhan, China, the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, Gavi, CEPI, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. You just can't make this stuff up. AstraZeneca, Oxford. There is a giant interrelationship with many stakeholders that absolutely positively, it's clear. I told Tucker Carlson this when I first interviewed with him. It's clear. There is an enormously powerful group of stakeholders, and they want a needle in every arm at all costs. And they don't care about anything. They don't care about age. They don't care about who's previously immune. They don't, they don't care about COVID-19 breaking through the vaccine. They don't care. It's a needle in every arm, in everybody. And it's not just a one-time thing. It looks like it's going to be every 6 months for a very long time. Australia has already pre-purchased 14 doses. That means 7 years of these shots. Canada is about 5 years. So the goal is a needle in every arm for a very long period of time, and relatively frequently. It's going to be hard to pull off the entire world going through this injection program.
And what is this? Is this pharmaceutical greed? Why is it? Why is it that they, meaning people of the nature of Bill Gates, who has openly stated this publicly, he wants everyone vaccinated. What does he care? What's the purpose of this in your view?
Boy, you'd have to ask them. I mean, I'm just a doctor. I've been trying to save as many patients as I can with COVID-19 and respiratory illness. I do the best I can. I got grants. I had investigational drug applications. I led the collaborations. As there's probably about 500 doctors in America. They're basically the heroes of America, trying to save people from COVID-19. There's about 1 million doctors on the sidelines who honestly haven't even tried to save a patient with COVID-19. And then you have this incredible cabal or consortium of stakeholders who are dead set on vaccination at all costs. It does lead one to the conclusion that it may not all be about COVID-19. I can't imagine what it is all about, but right now it's not working out well from a safety perspective. If you said, listen, there are stakeholders that simply want to vaccinate the world because it's a beneficial thing for the world, my Lord, we've got a problem. We've had 18,000 people in the U.S. CDC VAERS system that died after the vaccine. We have two analyses, one from Rose and one from McLaughlin, showing half the deaths occur within 48 hours, 80% occur within a week. Sadly, who dies after the vaccine are seniors, the very people we're supposed to protect. We now know the vaccines trick the body into making this dangerous Wuhan spike protein, the product of genetic gain-of-function research. The spike protein is deadly. That's really the mechanism how people die. It either directly kills them or kills them through blood clots or damaging the brain or the heart. Well-described myocarditis now, 11,000 cases of myocarditis, fatal cases being reported, autopsies being done. I mean, it's clear. It's a killer. The vaccine is a killer. And Americans know that. You know, the story on vaccines causing death basically by word of mouth got out despite massive suppression in the media. People started talking, and you know what happened is the rates of vaccination in the United States absolutely plummeted in mid-April. There were people, the vaccine centers basically just dried up. Nobody was going into them. And then we saw these perverse inducements. People could get donuts and hot dogs and beer, and then it turned into $1 million raffles and free college scholarships. Nobody would go for it. Recently in Europe, you can go to a brothel and get some free time with a sex partner if you take the vaccine. I mean, there's no end to the bribery that'll happen to get someone to take a vaccine, and they still won't take it. So then the other approach then is to take the stick and mandate people take the vaccine. People say, listen, you have to take the vaccine for your freedom. And people are saying, listen, I don't want to lose my life with the vaccine. Then the people say, well, take the vaccine anyway. They say, well, I want an exemption. They say, we don't care if you're going to die. Take the vaccine. And so you can see the tensions that people are under right now. So people are losing their job, but they don't want to lose their life. I mean, you can't blame them. The problem is everything's rare. COVID-19 is rare. Death is rare. Death after COVID-19 is rare. So everything's rare. And so people are trying to go through these calculations and try to figure out. And I get these desperation calls and emails. Dr. McCullough, I have to take the vaccine, but I don't want to take the vaccine. What should I do? And then I asked them, I said, well, what's the social contract? If you take the vaccine, what do you get out of it? They go, well, I get to keep my job. I said, well, don't you have your job now? I said, yeah. I said, well, what do you get? Do you get 10 years of employment, 5 years? Do you get a year? Do you get 6 months? Do you get 3 months? I mean, the social contract is getting pretty short on taking a vaccine. It looks like maybe you get 6 months of employment, maybe three. It's not much of a social contract. It's almost down to a half a year sabbatical. You look at it. So people who are pushing the vaccines, which are all research, no one can push people into research, but it's being done, it's violating all the codes of ethics, that the people who are promoting the vaccine, they should offer a little better social contract. Like, listen, these vaccines are really dangerous. They don't work against COVID anyway. But if you take the vaccine and you comply, you get something really good out of it. But most of it is just you can get to keep your job for another 3 months or 6 months.
Peter,
it's not very, not go very ahead. Good. Yeah, it's just, I guess it's not very good. You know what I mean? So it's the type of thing where it's really the vaccine program. COVID-19 was one problem. But I think in many ways, the vaccine program is worse than COVID-19, the illness. It's really thrown the world off its axis.
Yeah. And for me, it's anytime there's bribery involved, I personally get turned off. Peter, when the virus first broke as a pandemic, and I'm coming from a 2016 epidemic in Miami with the Zika virus. That's when I started this program. How far along that line from the outbreak in 2020 did you start to question the validity of the virus? And when did you come to the conclusion that it had been manipulated in a laboratory?
I would say when Senator Rand Paul started having the hearings with the director of the National Allergy and Immunology Branch. I think at that point in time, I think those discussions were fairly revealing. Now, I had been to China 5 times, and people made a big deal about National Institutes of Health funding going to the Chinese Wuhan lab. I tell you, it wasn't the money the Chinese needed. The Chinese had plenty of money. I've been to their labs. Their labs are wonderful. The Chinese didn't need any money. They didn't need to buy any equipment. They needed the intellectual capability of modifying the spike protein, and that's what they got through these grants. And I think when the investigations are done and it's all said and done, I think there was great assistance by many stakeholders to make the virus far more infectious and far more deadly on purpose.
Wow, that's strong. As we wind down here, Peter, I thank you for your time. As listeners listen to your words, wise words, 51 peer-reviewed publications. You've spoken in front of Senate. I'd imagine you're interviewed internationally. What is the best foot forward here for people around the world, but certainly as Americans? Because it seems that the Americans are the ones that are pushing back against these mandates the most. That's just my view. Maybe I'm wrong. What's the best foot forward for people to move on?
Well, I would say 5 quick points. First is, we now know the virus cannot be spread without symptoms. So anybody asymptomatic, no need for a mask, no need for any concern. Anybody developing cold symptoms, stay at home, get a test, don't let your kids go to school. That's point number one. Point number two is, since you can't spread it if you don't have symptoms, no more testing of people without symptoms. We don't need to test people before they get on airplanes or schools or crossing the borders and stuff. That's none of that's supported by any of the regulatory authorities. You know, the FDA doesn't endorse that or hasn't cleared the test for that. The CDC doesn't say to do that. The World Health Organization is against it. So we need to stop all this asymptomatic testing. Third point is the immunity is robust, complete, and durable. You can't get the virus a second time. So once you've had a documented COVID case, you're done. Now you should just avoid future testing. The only confusion out there is people getting false positive tests in the future. They think they've gotten a second time. They can't. Even our CDC has told Americans you can't get it a second time. They've admitted that in the last couple of weeks. In fact, no one's ever gotten a second time and ever spread it. So once you've had COVID-19, you're recovered, you never need a mask. You can be around patients with COVID. You can't get it a second time. Definitely don't need a vaccine. that number could be as high as 200 million Americans now don't need to get anywhere near a mask or a vaccine. It's over with for them. The crisis is basically over for a huge number of Americans. That's great news. The fourth point is it's treatable. If you're still susceptible and you get COVID-19, or if you're taking the vaccine and the vaccine's failed, you treat it. Get early treatment. The monoclonal antibodies up front. We've seen former President Trump. We've seen Governor Greg Abbott. He failed the vaccines for him. He got antibodies. Podcaster Joe Rogan. Had quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Goes on and on. The bottom line is get monoclonal antibodies. Get the other drugs in sequence combination. Get through the illness. Avoid hospitalization. And then the final point is the vaccines as we stand today. There's three vaccines, Moderna, Pfizer, and J&J. The winner, by the way, is Moderna. Moderna has the best coverage against COVID-19, so 100 micrograms of messenger RNA. Pfizer's second, and J&J is in the lead last. If you're going to take a vaccine, certainly take the best one. Why would you take the worst one if they're not single products? You know, the stakeholders will say, take a vaccine, take any vaccine. That doesn't make any sense right now, since it's relatively clear there's a winner, there's a middle, and then there's a loser. You might as well take the winner if you're going to do it to protect against COVID-19. But the vaccines, basically, none of them last 6 months. And then they all cause a progressive accumulation of this spike protein in the body, which looks very dangerous long term. It's going to cause chronic disease in the brain, the heart, the bone marrow, the hematologic system. We're very worried about long term cancer risks now that we know the spike protein accumulates. The spike protein interacts with two cancer genes, P53 and BRCA. And with the vaccines, we know now the immediate risks of death and hospitalization are extraordinarily high, far greater than any injectable product we've ever seen in human history. So for that fifth point, many people are just going to want to defer on the vaccine. It is true, they're more likely to live and survive without the vaccine than taking the vaccine. And that analysis has been published by Kostoff and colleagues. So at this point in time, I think we can pause the vaccines. There's probably better ones coming. One of the better ones looks like it's Novavax. And I think our seniors, who now are effectively uncovered, they probably would benefit from a Novavax universal booster program. But we got to get off the genetic vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, which is kind of bad ones out of the gate, and look forward to safer vaccines in the future. So I'll let that be the last word.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Peter A. McCullough. Dr. McCullough, thank you for joining Discussions of Truth.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go. 51 peer-reviewed 51 peer-reviewed publications, and I'll put my opinion in here. I'm gonna close this out and bring on John O'Connor. Folks, if you're listening to this and you're contemplating whether to inject yourself with this, what I clearly call an inoculation. I have zero medical training. I simply listen to experts such as Dr. McCullough. But I also, I do have a conscience, right? And I do have an innate sense of what I like and what I don't like and what I feel is good and what I feel is not good. And my personal feeling is always, since day one, it's always been I will not inject myself with anything that I am not 100% sure that it is safe for my anatomy. Now, of course, I'm pro-medicine to the degree that if it's a proven medicine, it's proven to work, i.e. an ibuprofen, right? A headache, I'm gonna ingest something for a headache. Okay, fine. Yeah, I'll do that. It's fairly benign, considering and compared to an injection that has mRNA and synthetically reproduces spike protein. No, not cool. Okay, not cool. I mean, I'm the type of person that says, all right, I got a cold or a flu. Give me some real potent lemon tea. Right, maybe a garlic clove. My breath will stink, but let me let my immunity fight this off as best as possible. Last case scenario, I inject anything into my body. That's just me. That's just me. That's my own personal choice. But after hearing Dr. McCullough, well, that reinforces my position that, you know what? Hey, innately, I don't want any injection that I'm not comfortable taking in my body, I'm not going to take it. And that's what I would impress upon you. If you're listening to this and you're contemplating, oh, should I inject the vaccine, so-called vaccine? Because we know by definition it's not a vaccine. And the FDA, quote, approval is not approval. It's approval of a part of an approval process. Best states what my understanding is of it. But no, this is not something that seems to be 100% safe for the human body. Put it at that. And there you have an incredibly well-credentialed. And I thank him for his time. He's very gracious to join the program. It's very nice of him to do so. The man is obviously incredibly busy. But there you have, from a very well-respected source, the vaccines are basically not safe, is what he's saying. In my view, you just listen to what he said. You can conclude. You can conclude your own summation of the dialogue we just shared. But I wouldn't take the vaccine, and I would also encourage you to, even if you have received the vaccine, or you still are planning on receiving it, or want to receive it, or you're not yet sure whether you should receive it. I would encourage you to fight, not physically, but fight. Okay, no censorship here. Right? Fight, definition of fight, I'm not talking about a physical fight. Fight for people's rights. Fight for those people that don't want to receive the vaccination. Fight for the right to receive it or not to receive it. Everyone, as far as I'm concerned, that is inalienable right. You cannot force those things on people. Now, if a child is born and a proven immunization is administered, that's a different story. But forced injections on an incredibly questionable, it's even a questionable virus. As you said, McCullough says it's engineered in a lab. Rand, I think that's based off of, it sounds like the Rand Paul's research and testimony. It seemed manipulated to me from day one, but that's only because I'd been exposed to the Zika virus, the quote Zika virus. And of course, a Zika virus is a legitimate, it's a real virus. COVID-19 is based off of real viruses. It's a real virus, and the coronavirus, Zika is a real virus. But things got a little bit murky when I started studying the financial incentives some of these other people were collecting from it and the pesticide. So when this pandemic broke out for me in 2020, I think it was, I took things with a grain of salt because I'm like, oh, wait a second. I just saw this a few years ago in Miami. But then once I listened to Catherine Austin Fitz, who's agreed to join this show, looking forward to hosting her, pardon me. Former Reagan advisor, Wharton grad. Wharton is the business school, Pennsylvania, UPenn. Look, she was saying tearing down the layers here. There's some science that's been developed, some technology that's been developed that's far advanced, that's not in the mainstream yet. This has to do with micro software in the human body, communicating with 5G, Wi-Fi, that sort of thing. Sure, you can pawn that off as a conspiracy theory. Folks, I say there's no theory about it. There's no theory. There is legitimately a banking cartel. This is my view. And I've been researching this for 5 years. This is what I accumulate right now. And it's based in large portion off of Anthony Sutton, former Hoover fellow, Stanford, who walked away from Stanford because they began censoring him in the 70s. He's written a book, and I alluded to this with Mark Shaw. He's written a book called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. A conspiracy, you conspire to overthrow something. That's what that is. And I state right now, I'm not sure what that is. I state right now that the United States, there is a group of well-organized international people that are that have conspired to overthrow and destroy the United States of America. I mean, the United States is an enemy today to many people, and it has been an enemy since the inception of the country in 1776. These forefathers of ours fought physically for their rights. That enemy still exists. Don't think it doesn't. Follow the money. So, Dr. McCullough graciously joined us. I thank you again, Dr. Peter McCullough. And there are a growing number, folks. There are a growing number of medical doctors, such as Peter, and scientists and lawyers that are fighting this, that are now growing in number and standing up to this and saying, no, 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 you're infringing on our rights. We refuse. Josh Yoder, U.S. Freedom Flyers, first pilot, first class, or first officer, rather. He has a massive organization now that's boomed in the past 4 months because of people that are saying no to the mandates. No. Draw the line. No, I will not allow this injection into my body. Like I say, this is an inoculation. This is an inoculation. It's clearly an inoculation in my view. Vaccine. Ridiculous. Okay, so thank you to Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm going to take a brief break here, and I'll be back with John O'Connor. Thanks for tuning in. Share the program. Pass it on. Pass it on. Pass it on. Pass it to a friend. Send it to a foe. Send it to a foe. We got to be united here, folks. We got to be united. Look at the science. Be awesome.